Welcome to the Voodoo Power Podcast.
Welcome to Plates and Pancakes, a sit-down day with Nate Harvey. Coach Harvey is the author of Conjugate U and a contributor for Elite FTS. He developed his vast athletic history as a former head strength and conditioning coach of Olympic sports at SUNY Buffalo. During his 10 years at UB, he coached their first-ever national champion shot putter, 14 conference champions, 8 of the school's 12 total All-Americans, 18 Olympic trial qualifiers, over 50 individual conference champions, 16 individual national qualifiers, and over 75 individual regional qualifiers using the conjugate method. He was also a strength conditioning consultant for the New York Jets. Harvey was an accomplished powerlifter with his best lifts of a 1,000-pound squat, a 750-pound bench, and a 750-pound deadlift. He is currently accepting online clients and doing on-site consulting with high school and college strength and conditioning departments. So welcome to the show, Coach.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, man.
We were just talking a little bit off air, and I thought it was pretty cool. Maybe we can kick off with this, but you got to SUNY Buffalo, and you found yourself surrounded by some pretty outstanding coaches. So how fortuitous was that, I guess?
It was really cool. I mean, like, because I started training when I was 12 and kind of, just like most of us, like, kind of got obsessed with the weight room and stuff. And, you know, like I kind of mentioned, I was following all the stuff on Elite, and then like my first internship, I actually got accepted for the internship, and which was great because I knew the previous coach that was there, and I kind of knew of him and knew he was along the same lines of thinking as me. And then like the first day I started, they were like, it was Cheyenne Teacher, and hey, Cheyenne's leaving. So I was like, oh shit, I just went through grad school and I had all these, you know, everything lined up. Now this guy is not going to be here. So we didn't have a supervisor for 2 weeks. And then, like I said, I had been reading Elite stuff, and Buddy Morris was Coach X on there for years. And I religiously read all his stuff, you know, and they told me he was coming in. I was like, okay, cool. I guess this will work out. And then there was Julie Anto was there, who was also on Elite's team at the time, still on, but, you know, at that time was on with Elite. And then Buddy brought in Paul Childress, who was like world champion powerlifter for a long time. Awesome strength coach. He brought him in at the same time. And then Ryan Groneman was also there, who he's probably one of the best hands-on coaches I've ever seen. But like his background, he played at Boise State his senior year. Was the year they went undefeated and made the first bowl game in school history and stuff. But while he was in college, his strength coach was Joe Penn. So I had like all these people at my first job, you know, at this little kind of brand new Division I university. So it was just, it really was kind of a dream. I was like, holy shit, like things couldn't have worked out better. You know what I mean? So, but that was, you know, it was great. It was just, I'm lucky those guys didn't like kick me out of the weight room for asking them so many questions. You know, I felt like the old cartoon with there's like the big bulldog and the little puppy bulldog bouncing around, you know, bugging him, asking him questions and stuff. But no, nah, it was awesome.
So prior to that, what led you to the conjugate method as opposed to more of a periodization or even a tier system?
I grew up in a really small town and we didn't have race. Like I had to drive 45 minutes to the nearest gym. But I was obsessed with training. Luckily my dad got me a rack and stuff, for my room in high school, and my parents, which was upstairs in my house, looking back, must've been a nightmare for them. But I was like always looking for like the magic program, you know. I was probably a bit of a program hopper. And was just always looking for stuff, and being an athlete was cool because I could test it out. You know, I could train this way and see how I felt. Fast forward to college. I started out as a fullback. So I was a huge Mike Allstott fan. You know, like, and I was like, how is this dude training? Because I was, you know, in my mind, I was like, if I train like this guy, I can play like that. You know, that's not how it works, obviously. but I read an article somewhere where they talked about him training with chains on squat and bench. So I started researching that, and then I stumbled on article Louis wrote, and then Dave's periodization Bible part 2, which is basically like Conjugate for Dummies, kind of packs it all in. But it's like a 30-page article or something that he had up on Elite. And I was like, I read it and it all made sense. You know, doing the speed work or in the heavy days, and then your accessory work is smaller exercises and stuff. I'm like, this really sounds good. So I ran that going into my senior year. And I felt the best I'd ever felt. I felt fresh on game day. I felt the strongest I'd ever felt. I'd always test my lifts before season and then kind of right after. And my bench only fell off like 20 pounds. And I was like, holy shit. You know, because usually going after season and you put 225 on it, it feels like three or four plates. And you're like, oh, here we go. I'm way back behind the eight ball again. So that was kind of, you know, my aha moment with it. And then I just, you know, kind of kept on it. And then, like I said, 15 years later, whatever, when I did my grad work and stuff, I was lucky to kind of run into some of the top people and, you know, actually see it in action. That's kind of where, you know, and then hit the school, like our kids were kind of having success. I don't want to say they shouldn't have been having, but like we were getting Alabama kids, you know what I mean? And the teams that were under the system seemed to be doing the best, you know? So it was like, there's that kind of reaffirmed what I knew, you know, I knew early on that I was onto something, but you got to prove it at some point, you know? So that was kind of how that all worked out.
I stumbled on talking to a friend and he recommended it. I stumbled on Conjugate U, which is just an amazing book. It's, I have a background in Conjugate, so we'll start there, but cool. That made it very simple. And it was an easy read that you could just fly through and see the different parts and how you made it work. So deciding to come out with that book, how much work was that?
A lot. I am not a English major or would not consider myself a good writer. But it was like kind of towards the end of like my coaching stuff, I was starting to go out and speak a little bit. And just, I was lucky enough to get invited to a couple seminars and asked to speak. And I was like, I'll just like talk about the box fly, you know, because I think it's kind of the basis of the program, you know, of the program. And if you can get that, a lot of other things will fall into place. And I went back and was talking to my assistant and I was like, dude, a lot of people don't know the very basic concepts of this program and how to do it. Like, it was like we were kind of taking it for granted because we were around such great people. You know, when I went out and talked to people, everybody was like, oh, this is great. This, you know, this, but I was just showing them like the fundamentals, the basics, you know? So I was like, we should put a manual together of how we're training the kids and stuff. And then, so that was kind of the process. And like, I had to, for me to learn and get myself through grad school, I had to like kind of dummy things down, for lack of a better term. Well, that's just kind of how I took our system. You know, I tried to make it as simple as possible, and luckily it kind of fell together and worked out all right.
Yeah, because about the same time I was reading Louis's special development for all athletes, and then Conjugate U at the same time, they never contradict each other, but Conjugate U is such an easier read that if somebody was going to start somewhere, that's probably the book to start at.
Like, I always think about, like, a lot of the smartest people you know are kind of hard to understand when they're talking about their stuff. Like, Louis, you know what I mean, was, like, kind of the evil genius, I guess. Or kind of, like, if you read Super Training, like Mel Siff, like, he's supposed to be one of the greatest minds, you know. And just a lot of, like, just in my past experience, a lot of, like, really smart people can be kind of hard to understand things. Like, they obviously know this stuff, but to digest it and kind of break it down sometimes can be tough. But so that was kind of, I was hoping, because I kind of thought, like, if my dumb ass can do this, if my teams can do this well with it, like, there's smarter people out there that can do a much better job than I can, and I want to try to get it out. Because like I mentioned earlier, when I was coming up, like, I didn't have any resources, you know what I mean? We didn't have internet or all this stuff. We had to, just like driving to the gym, I had to drive to the mall to get the latest Muscle and Fitness, which was a half hour away. You know what I mean? So I thought there's got to be a great place for this in high schools, because to me, it's so easily teachable. And if you get them at a young age doing basics right, then they'll just take off, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and another thing I've heard you mention, and you know, I pulled stuff from all sorts of different places. So whether it be from the book or a podcast or some of your articles, is you don't have to use a ton of weight, and not near as much weight as you think, to get these kids strong. When did you kind of get on that concept of the 3 and 5 reps really building some athletes?
It was probably, I had a couple coaches that didn't want to do heavy stuff in season. So I was like, well, what if we do, because I wanted to keep them squatting and all, you know, those things. I was like, what if we do like some lighter weights and just push it as hard as you can, so we build their explosiveness, and then their accessory work could take care of the other stuff, help them, you know, build a little strength and be injury free and stuff. And there was, I think it was diving and wrestling that we did that with. And then we tested their mats. It was a couple weeks after season, and almost every kid was at 90% or better of their preseason strength. So that was where I kind of realized, I think it's good to do the heavy stuff too, but if you're in a situation where you can, or you have to do something else, you could still get them strong and they don't have to fall off so much during the season, you know?
Yeah, because at the same time, you're working with the sport coach, and he's going to kind of dictate to you how he wants his athletes trained. So somehow you have to find a common ground and get your job accomplished while still keeping him happy.
Yeah, like, you got to kind of use the terms that, to me, get beat to death, like explosive or core. You got to kind of use that stuff sometimes. So I think that's, you know, was maybe an easier selling point. I think they hear max effort method in the weight room, and they don't want to, you know, they kind of don't want to touch it. Even though we want our athletes to give max effort on the field, you know, there's that little hypocrisy there. But yeah, I think that was just a little bit easier for them to kind of stomach and kind of roll with.
Yeah, the field's max effort the whole game time, whatever that may be. And then sometimes we get away from it in the gym, so you're not really practicing in the gym what you're practicing on the field. So sometimes to have a kid prepared, maybe maximal lifts are the way to go.
Yeah. That's not to say max effort's bad. You know, it's like football guys, or, you know, even bat. Like, I always tried to train my groups according to their ability in the weight room and their desire, I guess, in the weight room, more so than what their sport was. You know, if my basketball guys would have come in and been cool doing max effort work once a week, and I could have got something out of it, we would have done it. You know, because if I could have got, let's say, 80% of our basketball guys squatting 4 plates on a safety bar, which all of them were more than capable of, but I knew the motivation wasn't there, and it was going to be kind of a shit show, just because, you know, we want the kids to be safe and stuff. You know, so it wasn't worth, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze on that one. But I tried to explain this to them. If they would let me take them there and we could go there, they would be so hard to deal with. You know, because they're already so fast and explosive. If you could get them that strong, like, they'd be unstoppable on the court, you know, so.
Yeah,
if you could pull it off, I like to go with a max effort, or at least some, you know, working around 80% or whatever in season 2 is good, I think.
Yeah, because you're starting to add the other piece in that they don't get. They're always getting speed and explosive, but now if you can combine that heavier work in there, you've got the trifecta of everything you want.
I always thought about it like, these guys have been, and kids or whoever, they've been running and jumping and doing that stuff basically since they could walk almost. You know, how much better are you going to get at those things by doing more of that? You know, like you said, bring in that other piece and stuff will take off.
And you're not the only one to talk about it, and maybe I'm learning it as I go on, but you do bring it up. Excuse me. Underestimating maxes. You can run lower percentages off their maxes. They're going to catch their maxes. It doesn't matter. You're making them stronger fast, but this way you keep some of the volume down. Stumbling across that, how did you see that work out?
It was kind of a necessity. Like, there was a lot of teams, like, we couldn't, and I was never a fan of the kids come back from break and test their 1 rep max. Because I know they haven't done what they should be doing, most of them, to get an actual max. So just let them train for a month. And then if it's a team that can handle doing the max and we can work for cents, then we'll do that. But really, like, you can just you can estimate it for like trying to set up your dynamic days. I'm talking about, you know, if you just estimate it and watch the bar speed and make sure they pause and make sure there's some pop on the bar and stuff, everything else will take care of itself. And then as they're ready, you can start increasing the max effort or even just heavy loads, you know, as you go along, and everything will take off and run the way it's supposed to. I think people get, and I've done this in my own training and before too, with groups, we get impatient. You know, we think, okay, oh, it's week two. They should be doing crazy weights and all. Like, take your time, you know, especially with the young kids, because they'll develop so fast. Try to play the long game, I think, is, you know, an important thing.
When you're switching out exercises, it doesn't take them very long to really shoot up in numbers. And I know reading like Conjugate U, you're switching between bars and chains and accommodating resistance. Well, that max numbers, they're going to catch their max number very rapidly.
And it always happens that way. And if they don't panic, you know, like I always thought, like, I honestly don't care what your squat max is right now. If you just like come in and train for a couple months, we're going to get you where you need to be. Like you said, they're going to catch that strain. So like if they come in, like, well, let's say we're supposed to test and they don't PR, who cares? You know, like, it's good that they want to get better and get stronger and stuff, but sometimes they start to freak out, or a coach might be like, oh, their strength is only, well, yeah, the kid also sleeps 3 hours a night and had however many hours of practice in class and, you know, probably broke up with their boyfriend, girlfriend or whatever, you know, so if it doesn't happen on that one instance, we're good. Don't sweat it.
And some of the stuff I saw on you, you touch on that a little bit. I mean, kids like to be active, and you're in college. They're going to go out. They're going to have fun. They're going to do different things. They've got tests they've got to do, classes. They've got social life. So you've got two choices, and you kind of touched on this. You can bury them with work, or you can train around what you know they're going to do. So making that concession and understanding that, when did you kind of stumble on that?
Probably pretty early on, thankfully. Like I had, like Buddy used to talk about that a lot too, like with his previous experience with the NFL guys. You know, they're supposed to do this certain stuff. They're going to do what they want. So you got to work around it. And that too, you know, working around when the kids come in and look like total shit, like, you know, you got to modify things. So you got to kind of work around what's going on in practice and all that other stuff too. You know, and I've seen people that didn't do that, and the injury rates just take off, and the, you know, kids look like shit. And it's funny. This just made me think of that. So like, we'll do like a peaking phase, and I observed this a few times. I would run like a kind of a mini Circa Max phase with the athletes. Like, they had a big event, we would do like a peak, and it starts like 3 weeks out or whatever. And I would kind of watch. And I've seen this with other training, like you kind of see the training, like where they're putting too much volume on the kids and stuff. And it's usually around that 3 week mark where they'll start to fall apart. You know what I mean? I always thought that was weird. Like, I remember looking back a few programs, and the volume was crazy, and the kids are, you know, the first week they're all charged up and ready to go. And then you see them the second week, and they're kind of like looking at you like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then week three, there's, you know, fucking lag at the trainer's room door. It's just like, that's really weird. That 3 week thing is like, there's something to that.
Well, and just understanding that all that and how it all comes around, you know, I've been around coaches that they'll schedule an early practice New Year's Day to keep their guys from going out New Year's Eve and stuff like that. And it's like, you didn't keep them from going out. They just came in with no sleep. So, you know, they still did what they wanted to do, believe me. But I just never quite understood that. So you got yourself up as a coach out of bed early on a holiday to come in here, and all these kids are just trying to hope that they don't smell like alcohol or whatever it is they were doing the night before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We had one of those one day, and the kid was, it was a hammer row machine. And there's a bunch of kids in the room. And it was just me watching the room, and, you know, so. And the team's most of my teams did a great job training for the most part. You know, I could walk around and coach. You know, the kids are doing what they're supposed to do. And I was down at the other end of the room. I come walk back. Kid's got his hands on the hammer row. He's his head's like this. He was sleeping. I was like, dude.
You're not going to change him. You just got to work around him.
Yeah, I agree.
That gets into the aspect, I guess, pretty quick of punishment work won't fix athletes. How do you correct some athletes that might be giving you some problems when you were at SUNY?
It's tough, man. I'm trying to think, you know. Like I said, most of our kids did a pretty good job. It's like, and Buddy talked about this a little bit too, like there's 5% that will drive you nuts if you let them, but the problem is that 5% takes away from the other 95% that are doing a good job. If there's a group that's like almost the whole group is kind of like that, you just got to scale things way back in the room and kind of babysit them. You know what I mean? Like make the training as simple as you can. And like, I like to have the workout on the board, you know, bring a group up and give them a breakdown of what's going on. Here's your stuff. Okay, let's go. And then go coach real hard on the main lifts and then kind of supervise on the other stuff. Like groups that aren't good at that, you got to kind of babysit them like, okay, you three guys are on rack one. You three guys are on rack two. This is exercise one on my clock. You know, maybe do timed reps, stuff like that. And then once you kind of get that honed in, I think you can, it's good to try to guide them and teach them like, hey, the workout was really hard. So that's how it has to be all the time. And if you guys can adjust what you're doing and fix this, we can do much better stuff that's going to accelerate your progress a lot faster. But if you can't do that, then we got to keep going like this, like where I'm babysitting. You know what I mean? It sucks because I don't like doing that, but I think you just got to kind of police them more. And it makes your job much harder.
In saying that, how did you keep from letting them bring you down to their level? I mean, it doesn't take much of that every day babysitting before you dread going in and working with them. How'd you stay upbeat and motivated?
I don't know, man. I've always just kind of loved it. So it was, and you get to everybody gets to that point, you know, at some point. But you try not to let it too much. And then begin, like, if there's a couple problem kids, you know, I do your best to kind of bring them along and stuff. But at some point, you gotta cut your losses. You know what I mean? If I'm trying to help this kid one on one for 3 weeks in a row and he's not, then I'm gonna go help the kids that wanna accelerate. You know what I mean?
So an offshoot of that isn't necessarily your problem kids, but your lagging athletes. Bringing your lagging athletes up. How would you do that? Would you group maybe a few of them together, or take a lagging athlete, put him with a better athlete? What were you kind of looking to do there to even the room out?
I think it's a good idea to put, if you got some lagging kids, put them in a better group so they can catch up. You know, and you can even appoint, like, Buddy did a really good job of this. Like, with a large group of football, like, each rack has you can have, like, a captain on each rack or an upperclassman, you know what I mean? Like, and let them know, hey, you're in charge. Keep an eye on this guy. Bring him along. You know what I mean? And that, I think that peer pressure usually helps. Like, I'm just thinking of baseball right now. Like, we would kind of, our new, like, baseball did a great job for me overall. And they trained real hard and we were kind of on it and stuff. But it was tough when we would get freshmen in because the returners were up here and the freshmen were here. So we would kind of, like, have the freshmen or new guys on max effort days for, like, in the beginning for a month, just have them do dynamic stuff. And I'd let them hang together, you know, in those groups. And then after that, you can kind of, and they'll get more comfortable too. So they'll start kind of splitting off and getting with like equal kind of strength level and stuff. But yeah, I think it's a, you know, if you can get a, you can treat those older guys or leaders kind of like your assistant coaches a little bit, you know, and get that peer pressure working. I think that's a good idea to kind of do it that way.
So establishing indicator kids to help do what you're talking about there. How did those guys set themselves apart where you kind of understood that's who you wanted to be the captain of this rack or whatever the case may be?
Just the kids at work. You know what I mean? The kids that you have to tell to back off and like, hey, you don't need to do this much today. You know, and the kids that ask you questions, like they're actually showing an interest. Those are your guys. You know, the kids that you don't have to watch to make sure they're doing all their sets of abs, you know, shit like that. When you're doing group work, it's the kids that you turn around and you know they're still doing what they're supposed to be doing.
And you touched on this, and I think this gets overlooked so much, but you can't focus all your energy and results on your freaks and ignore the skinny kid in the corner, because there's a time that skinny kid may turn into your next freak, and you don't want to create resentment there that you didn't pay attention to them when they were coming up. So I don't know. Did you see a lot of skinny kids turn into freaks and you kind of learned that lesson the hard way?
No. But it's like, to me, it was like, I always tried to help the kids that want to help themselves, you know, and I think we all do that. Like the kids that want to work. So I don't care what you slot. If you come in and you're paying attention and you're on task and you're doing what's asked of you, like I'm going to help you as much as I can. You know what I mean? So I was in a workout and like the top football player came in and the whole football team was training. And the one coach, when superstar guy came in, he like just turned his back on the whole room and went over and has bro hug dude to come in, you know, and you know, he's over there talking to him. And I literally saw some of the players, like I was kind of watching, I literally saw some of the players just kind of looking like, what is he doing over there? Like we're training and he's over there fucking jaw jacking with, you know, all American guy. I'm over here trying to train. So I was like, yeah, that's not good. You know, but I've always tried to give the kids the most I could, as long as, you know, they're on task and doing what they're supposed to do. I don't care if I always said, like, I don't have to work with football or like I'll coach the chess team. If chess team wants to come in and work hard, like, let's go. Those are my guys.
Reading through Conjugate U and then taking that back to some of the Russian stuff and some of Louis stuff, it looked to me like you kind of were setting your volume off of a max times 12. And that kind of helped determine where you wanted to be on total volume. Does that make sense?
You're talking about max effort?
And roughly your max effort to work out like that, but your dynamic effort to work out like that too. I mean, I know Louis used to talk about that. So is that kind of how, what a base maybe you use to figure out what guys needed to be doing and keep their volume in check?
Yeah. I'm sorry. So like all the dynamic stuff was off Prolovin's chart. You know, so we just followed like what Louis did just for the most part, like 8x3 on bench, 8x2 on squats. That works great. But you could also, like, if you think they need a little more time under tension for like to match up the timing of their sport, or, you know, they need some, like you said, some more volume, might need to build some tissue. Yeah, that's how we regulated our volume. We basically went off Prolovin's chart. And then, you know, like I said, sometimes we'll mix in threes, fives, something different. But yeah, that's usually how we did it. And then, like, you know, the max effort stuff is obviously low volume. We try to get up to that max or top set within 7 sets. So it was, and I tried to do that on the separate days too. So I tried to do like max effort or heavy days would be lower overall volume. Like even on the accessory stuff would be kind of lower rep, 6, 8, 10. And then dynamic days would be a higher volume. So our accessory stuff might be 10, 12, 15, 20. Sometimes we did time sets and sets of 30 and crazy shit. But it was all lighter and smaller exercises, so it doesn't kick the crap out of them. I think a lot of people miss that. That's what I really like about the system. Like, you come in, you warm up, jump, and then you have one or two barbell movements, and the rest of the stuff is smaller special exercises. So you can throw a lot of work at the kids. and build them up, but not kick the shit out of them. You know what I mean? I think if your program is 5, 6, 7, 8 full body barbell movements, you're going to be hurting. Your kids are, they're not going to last long. And I actually learned that because I ran the old Husker Power when I was in college. Everything had to be ground-based because I'm an athlete. So that's why, how I have to do everything in the weight room. And it kicked the shit out of me. I was like, something's, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. But I kind of learned my lesson from it. Like, it doesn't make sense if we do these smaller exercises. And they, it's harder for them to screw it up and get injured. You know what I mean? A lot of the kids we work with, they don't care about lifting like we do. So if I can give them smaller stuff and it's harder for them to screw up and get injured on, I'm going to go with that. You know what I mean?
Well, and I was trying to establish that before I moved on to the next, because I know it, it gets in the book. It talks about you use deadlift, bench press, and squat is your main lift, as opposed to some Olympic lifts, which, you know, whether you're an Olympic guy or not, it doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, you can take those numbers and look at them and see where you're accumulating volume. And if some of your lifts aren't very good and you're not accumulating the volume that you like, well, then you have a base to go off of and you can rotate other exercises in to pick up the slack.
I like doing the Olympic lifts when I played. They're fun. They're cool to do. Like, it's fun to get a bar and throw it up and fucking, you know what I mean? But it also, again, it kicked the shit out of me. So I've never been a fan of that stuff.
When you were there and you're getting your freshmen, and you were talking about that a minute ago, and a lot of them were kind of lagging behind your upperclassmen, which is going to be the case probably in most places. But did it seem like to you that a lot of high school kids show the same deficiencies, you know, lack of hamstrings or lack of a lower back or lack of an upper back? Were you kind of seeing the same thing across the board?
Yeah. Yeah. So for the most part, like once in a while you get a kid who worked with somebody pretty good in high school and they'll be ahead of that group or whatever. But yeah. And like just tight hips. Like, and it, that all goes back to the weaknesses you just mentioned, right? If I'm weak in all those areas, my hips are going to be super tight because everything in there is holding on for dear life to try to survive. And I have it like a box spot. A lot of kids don't do that stuff, opening their knees and stuff, you know? So yeah, most of the high school kids, you see a lot of the same deficiencies.
Now, taking that a step further, by putting a kid in a box squat position, do you find that it creates like a forced mobility? And then you see those hips get a lot more mobile just because they have a place they're going to, so they're not going to get hurt. But then the weight helps open that up.
Every fucking time, yes. I don't want to talk too much shit, but like, and not that ankle mobility isn't important, but if you're box squatting, there's no... ankle mobility plays no role in that because you have a vertical shin. So I can squat and I take out this limiting factor that a lot of people are having problems with, and I'm building hip mobility at the same time. You know what I mean? Maybe if ankle mobility is a concern, maybe address it on a different exercise or a different movement. You know what I mean? But like, we didn't have to worry about ankle mobility to get them to squat correctly. You know what I mean? So it kind of checks another box and we don't got to worry about. I'm kind of lazy. I like to be efficient on stuff, you know?
So now that we've kind of hit that and with the box squat, we're creating some hip mobility. I noticed last night we did some depth drops with some weight and then we come out of the depth drop and we did a box jump. I noticed today that my hips are pretty sore. So developing hip strength on top of the mobility, would you use the sumo deadlift? What'd you use to build that hip strength up now that it's mobile?
Well, your box squats are good. That sumo is good. I think a lot of the smaller exercises, like we do those groiners, like just some sort of adduction movement. We just use a band or some Thompson heads. Some hip abduction will work. Single leg stuff will work because you're getting in a different plane. Not too much single leg. Yeah, sumo is good because it's funny. Like a lot of I would get some pushback from sport coaches. Like, why do you squat so high? And it's like, well, show me an athletic position. What are they going to do? They're going to squat down a little bit and their feet are going to open up outside of their shoulders. You know what I mean? The kids aren't used, they're not used to that. And that's why you see a lot of the issues that we see, the mobility stuff, because they're not used to being out there. So yeah, just any, like, and you don't have to go crazy wide, but just get out a little wider than they're used to and work on that and work on kind of rolling those knees out. I don't, that's one thing I is not taught very much. I don't think is kind of let those knees roll out and open. And then your hip can kind of, I'm not a biomechanist, right? I'm not a scientist, but I think it lets the hip kind of work the way it should. And it gives your glutes a chance to work instead of just being all quad and knee, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you make a good point in that Conjugate U book. And it was one I'd never really thought about, because you'll talk to a lot of coaches and they'll try to shy away from that wide stance stuff because they're like, well, it's not really sport specific. We don't play in that manner. But the point you raise is a wide stance squat will carry over to a narrow stance, but a narrow stance will never carry over to a wide.
No, it doesn't. And there's so many positions in the sport where our feet are wide. You know what I mean? Playing defense, all sorts. We open up and, like coaches talk about, he can't open his hips and turn. That it's the same. Your knee opens up and then your body follows. You know, it all carries over. And you're completely right on the Louis. Wide builds narrow, narrow doesn't build wide. He training. there was a time when I was training, and I think my close stance PR was like mid five or something with the yoke bar. And I did all wide work for, I don't know, a few months, came back to the close stance and crushed the, you know what I mean? I crushed the close stance PR. And I was like, oh, he wasn't full of shit, you know? And another, like in college when I switched over, so after, it wasn't until after my senior year, I really dove into like a conjugate program and kind of understood getting my feet out wide and stuff. Like I traditionally was like shoulder width or maybe even a little closer for my squatting. And when I went out wide and started going on the box, my hips, I got my ass kicked for months. So I was like, holy cow, I'm not strong at all out here. This is not good, you know? So you got, but that being said, you can't train just wide all the time. You got to vary it up and kind of give the kids different stimulus.
Did you find that your young athletes, when you brought them in, wanted to avoid wide at all costs because they weren't as strong and it just wasn't comfortable?
Yes, 100%. Yep. You got to kind of explain to them, hey, I know this sucks right now. I've been there. You're not going to be as strong, but once we get this up, everything else will take off, you know? And you'll see that on bench too. They want to, you know, bench with their freaking thumbs almost touching. Not that, but, you know, they get very close. Like someone with long arms, bring them out a little bit, and there's no upper back or shoulder strength, so you got to kind of bring that up too. But yeah, you got to, and that's what I like about the system too. If you run it correctly, you're going to get strong everywhere, not just where you're comfortable.
Yeah, they'll show you their weak points really fast because they'll do everything in their power to avoid them.
Yes, yeah, and it, like, so that's the thing. Like, you got to set their squat stance, otherwise they're going to squat where they feel.
They'll hide their weaknesses from you if they can, because they don't want you to pick them out.
Yeah. They're sneaky.
And they don't want to look stupid in the gym.
Exactly. I told one day my baseball guys, they were going too heavy on max effort. Or I'm sorry, on speed squat. And I wasn't too terribly strict on percents. As long as we can set our control and look good and kind of snap off the box, I'll let them go up a little bit or whatever. But the one day it was kind of out of hand. So I shut the music down and I was like, listen, you're not impressing anybody with your fucking two plate speed squat. Put the right weight on the bar because you're slow as shit. You know, I was kind of an asshole and ripped into him a little bit, but it was like, it's funny. Like wrestlers were like this. They didn't want to lift heavy when they were supposed to. They wanted to lift heavy when they were supposed to go lighter. When they're lighter, they want to go heavier. Like, we'll be both guys, just do it on the right day, you know?
I guess that raises a question. So you've dealt with it way more than I ever have. But getting that through kids' head, on that, on them speed days, them explosive movement days. It's supposed to be explosive. That seems to be the argument all the time. Well, it's too light. It's moving too fast. No, it's not moving too fast. It's probably still slower than what we want it. Don't try to go up in weight. Let's just get this faster.
Yeah, it's tough. And you're right. There's like, oh, it's not like they'll say, like you said, it's not heavy enough. Yes, it is. What I've done and what seems work a little bit, like I'll try to explain them. Listen, if you want to jump higher and run faster, keep this light right now, and the faster you move it, the more that's going to help you jump. I just try to, you know what I mean? I just try to keep it real simple. Then I'll say, hey, next time we're squatting on our heavy day, then we're going to put some weight on. You know, and that seems to help a little bit. I'm sure it doesn't cure it all, but I just try to keep it simple. You know, just try to, hey, this is going to help you run faster. You want to dunk? Keep the weight light today and move it as fast as you can. But
well, and it goes against everything a lot of them have ever been taught.
Yes, I know. There's a lot of bad information out there.
Yeah, you're starting to fight a dogmatic sense of how weightlifting is supposed to be.
Yeah, and it's tough. You know, there's like I mentioned before, like I had no information growing up. Now it's like there's so much. It's like, where's this kid get? You know, I can't tell you how many kids, you know, have come in and been like, I got this workout from bodybuilding.com. What do you think I do? I'm like, no.
Why is that? Why, you know, you've got information. Dave Tate's got information. All these coaches have great quality information. They don't go to those places. They go to the guy on Instagram that looks jacked or bodybuilding.com. And then those are the programs they want to use. Is it completely aesthetically driven? Is that what causes them to look for that?
I think so. I think you hit the nail on the head. I was going to say it, but you kind of said it before. I think it's this dude looks jacked or whatever. It's like what I did with Alsop. I wanted to play like him, so I did his workout. It's the same, you know, it's the same thing. But it's just they see this jacked dude. He has 100,000 followers. It's got to, that workout's got to be what's doing it for him. You know what I mean?
And I suppose we were the same in a lot of aspects of life. And then now we hold the kids to a higher standard, like they were supposed to evolve somehow, you know, from what we were when we were kids. And that's just not how it works.
Yeah, right. We yell at them for the same shit we did.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I think sometimes we separate ourselves so far away. We've been adults too long, you know.
Yeah, we forget.
Or we don't forget, and we just don't want them to let them know that we were ever that dumb.
Yeah, don't let them know. Don't tell them.
Accommodating resistance for building strength and speed. Do you use chains and bands, or do you kind of lean more towards the band side? What do you prefer in athletes?
I use them both. I use them earlier than I think most people do. Like I said, like when we get new people, we'll just do dynamic work for like 2-3 weeks. And I like to put bands or chains on as soon as, like, I would say like 3/4 of the room is proficient. You know what I mean? So their squats look pretty good. Their bench looks pretty good. Okay, let's put some accommodating resistance on. You need to scale it though. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to have a 135-pound squatter with 3 chain on each side. You know, it needs to be scaled. Typically, in the past, I would just kind of mix it up a lot. I always like to use bands more as we phase into when we need to be faster. You know what I mean? So like with a football team, maybe towards the end of, or maybe midsummer, we'll start using more band because I want them to be faster. You know what I mean? I'll use more chain in the off season. I think it, you know, it's just kind of give their body a break from the bands. The bands and stuff can be taxing. So we use more chain in the off season typically. But that's kind of how I've always run it. Something I changed that really helped a lot. I ran, when I was lifting, I ran Donnie Thompson's squat cycle that he used. And it helped me a ton. And then I kind of experimented on throwers. helped them quite a bit. And then our sprinters got it, and it kind of trickled down. Early on, I didn't use much accommodating resistance on max effort days, whereas Donnie had it on both days all the time. So I did that, and I think that really helped, is using accommodating resistance on the max effort stuff more. I don't know if it helps them learn to push and accelerate through more, or kind of what the deal is, but it seemed to, like, their jumps and stuff, when we did that, their jumps and everything took off too. And we weren't even really doing that much jump training at the time. We just kind of happened to test them, and jumps were going up and stuff. Like, I had our one thrower came in, the Vertec was all set up from another team, and he went in and slipped his shoes on, his squat shoes. He didn't even tie them. And he went over and jumped. He jumped like a 3-inch PR or something. I was like, you know, and I felt really good too with it. My strength took off when I started doing that too. So that was something that was definitely helped. So that's kind of why I've done it more with kids.
Now, this is jumping around a little bit, but you talked about sprinters in there. You have an article on Elite FTS where you talk about time squats for sprinters. That makes a ton of sense to me. How did that develop?
I just stole it from Louie. one of my friends actually went down and did an interview with him and recorded it. And I was watching it, and I think I may have, Childress came up with this too. He was messing around with him a little bit before. So he had the sprinters before I did. He was playing around with it a little bit too. But then I saw the interview and I was like, well, we're going to try that. But it was basically, we squat them for the time that their event is or a little longer. And we use lightweight, but it's as fast as they can go. I want them to sit under control, pause, and then snap off the box. But we try to get as many reps as we can within their, whatever their designated time is. And it really seemed to work. Like, it was really a pretty quick turnaround. Like, within a couple of weeks, they would come, like, my indicator kids would come in and they were like, hey, I felt really good running, you know, and they would pee up. That's what's cool about track. You know, it's working because they're clocked every week and they know if they're PRing or not. You know what I mean? So we kind of did that and got good feedback and things were going good. So we kind of rolled with it. And it evolved over time too. Like, when we started out, I didn't have a belt squat, so we had them doing it with the bar, and I think we started like around 20 or 30% of their max, plus whatever accommodating resistance they should have. We did it that way to start out, and then I was lucky enough we got two more belt squats in the room, so they would kind of come in waves, and it worked out enough where we could have kids going and rotate through, getting their speed work done. And then they could go on and do their accessory. So it worked. It worked really well with track. Then the swim coach heard about it, and he really liked the idea. The problem is those events are a little longer, and the kids, he goes, I don't think we can do it because they're so sore. Like, they could barely swim the next day. You know what I mean? So we kind of phased it out with them. Not that you couldn't do it, but you'd have to, I don't know, you'd have to change some things, because when we tried to do it, they were too banged up from it. So.
Well, that's where I've been leaning on, like, a K-box. I've been getting ready to build one, and I was thinking that, you know, as far as that goes, that might be better to work in time as opposed to reps. But there again, like you're saying, if you got a kid that's, you know, running 100 and you put him on that K-box for 12 seconds as fast as he could go, he might be pretty dang sore. So maybe looking at something closer to their 40 time or 60 time might work out better, but I was going to kind of get your thoughts on that.
It might work. Our weights were pretty light. So we would do, so when we got the box squats, we would take a mini band and we would double it up and then run it under, would go over each peg and then under the carriage. So it was like a quadded. So when you bench, it's doubled, right? Because I fold it. So we would have it doubled, but then it goes under there, so it's like quadded, almost like a deadlift setup. And then, like, our stronger kids, like our 100 meter guys, when we started out week one, they would only have that band on there and a 25 on each side, so it wasn't terribly heavy. I'm not trying to I don't want a bunch of tissue damage. You know what I mean? And that was our dynamic day, I think. But anyways, we kept it relatively light. And like some of the females, you know, would go with like that band and a tent on each side so that it's light and they're hammering it pretty quick.
So you're staying right down there in the explosive side of the strength curve. You're not trying to get up into dynamic. You're wanting to be 30% or even maybe even possibly less.
Yeah, because we typically, yes. Because we typically wouldn't do that until they were, well, we're 8 weeks out from like their big meet. So it wasn't something we did all the time. We would try to use that as kind of part of their peaking stuff.
Yeah, you don't want to accommodate to that right when you should be PRing, I guess.
Right, right.
I know through Elite FTS, you got introduced to RPR.
Yep.
How did that affect you personally? And then what did you see in athletes?
So like me personally, I went down, I did the workshop. It's a 6-hour drive for me to get down there. And typically I've always had like some right hip stuff kind of going on. That's always bothered me. It didn't cure it. I'm not going to go that far, but like typically I'd go to Columbus and I would, you know, on the way back, I would feel like shit because I'd been in the car for so long. And so I did the workshop at JL's, and I could tell, I was like, oh, I feel like I'm moving better. Like when I did the resets, it's kind of like stuff just kind of relaxed and settled. You know what I mean? That's not the scientific term, but that's kind of, it felt like everything kind of settled to kind of down where it should be. And so I did we did the workshop, and in the workshop, you partner up and somebody does all the reactive points, trigger points on you. And I basically did the workshop, hung out for a little bit, and then drove home. And, you know, I usually stop about 2 hours and get out and walk around. And it was like, every time I got out of the car, I felt better instead of worse. I was like, holy shit, is this stuff like, you know, really working? And then like, I got back, I squatted that next Monday and I did the reset drills, and like, my squat felt so different that my body wasn't used to moving like that, but it felt better. Like I wasn't cured, but my hip felt better squatting and stuff, like to the point where the movement almost felt a little foreign, but I felt like overall my body was moving better. So I was like, this shit could really work, you know? So I kind of stayed on it for a few weeks, and when I didn't do it, I felt worse. And then like New York State's kind of funny. Like as a strength coach, there's certain things, like I'm not supposed to be hands-on with certain things. So it was, I had to be careful, you know, how I did stuff. Like every once in a while, a kid would have something tight going on or whatever. And, you know, I'd talk to the trainer, hey, can we try this? Or, you know, and most of the kids, it helped out if we kind of went through and did the reset point. That was right at the last couple months I was coaching. You know, I was at a point where I wanted to do everybody. Like I wanted all the kids to do it. I was that sold on it. So I think it works. You know, it's a great tool. I haven't been on it lately, you know, cause I just like the kids that I yell at. I don't do the stuff I'm supposed to.
It seems like they all need zone one for sure. Every kid I deal with talks about tight hip flexors and the psoas and all that. And so if you don't even go past that, I think there's still a ton of benefit there.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I consult with the school down in Ohio. I write the programs out and I try to get down every 4 or 6 months or whatever, and then kind of see how everything's going. And they use it in their warmups. I know in the summer they're real big on it. You know, before they started, got guys out there. And they kind of shifted the program where the athlete could do it themselves. When I got my certification, the way they taught it was somebody has to do it for you. So that's kind of where I had trouble implementing it. But now it's kind of, it's evolved where you can teach the kids to do it. And, you know, yeah, it's the kids, their hips are terrible. And I get it. They sit down all day. You know, it's to be expected.
So taking that a little bit further, you get into firing patterns that are off and the low back issues you see in athletes. Building the low back, getting the firing pattern set so that your glutes and hamstrings are taking the force first. Did you see an improvement there, I guess, in speed and in lifting and in injuries?
Yeah, I think we kind of saw that just with the lifting. Like I said, I get the RPR stuff in as much as I would have liked, but I like, to me, that's what's so great about this system. Like, it addresses the glutes and hamstrings. You're doing direct glute and hamstring work with your GHR. You know what I mean? Like the basic kind of exercises and the way the template's set up, you're kind of hitting all those areas you talked about. You know what I mean? More so than a lot of other programs, you're doing some low back work. So their low back can actually handle the load that's placed on it with their sport. And you're training the shit out of their glutes and hamstrings. So those come up. So you're taking less pressure, more pressure off of the back. You know what I mean? Like, the kids actually use their glutes and hamstrings because they were squatting to depth and we opened up our hips a little bit and our feet are out a little wider than normal. So I'm getting more glute and hamstring activation than they would normally in a lot of, I think, traditional programs. You know, women's basketball was a team that did a great job for me. And the one summer we actually got most of the team to stay. And by the end of the summer, I was so pumped up because I'm like, I'm starting to see some hamstrings. Like, I'm starting to see some traps. You know what I mean? Like, we're starting to look like a, maybe not Power 5 D1 team, but we're much better off than we were last year at this point. And the coach took them off to a private facility to train for a couple months. And when I got them back, so I was big into the body tempering at this point. Like, most of that team would come in and get rolled out and stuff. And I remember they came back and I was rolling them out and I was getting pissed off as I was rolling out their hamstrings. So I was like, I didn't say anything to them, but I went and complained to my assistant. I was like, all that work we did is like, their hamstrings are gone. They're gone. And that, you know, it's because they're doing other stuff. And I was like, I was so frustrated because it's, you know, we were crushing them. I was having them do 4 sets of 60 on a reverse hyper. Like, we were putting them through it. They were doing 300 banded leg curls on dynamic day. You know what I mean? We got them up there, and then I saw, because I was right on their hamstrings rolling them out, I'm like, where did your hamstrings go?
Well, you just beat me to the next question, because I was going to ask reverse hyper and its effectiveness for athletes.
It's a must have. Really, like, in my opinion, we had virtually no low back problems. And, like, especially with basketball, as much running and pounding as those guys do, like, to me, it's a total necessity. At least once a week. Most of our kids, we would have to do twice a week, and one, you know, we may have warm up with it, you know, so it was lighter one day, and then the next, like, on heavy day, we would go heavier and stuff like that. But I think it helps so much because they're just pounding all the time. They're so compressed.
And all the consulting you do and everybody you work with, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see when working with coaches and consulting with them?
The biggest thing is just doing the basic stuff right. You know what I mean? Like, when I come in and see a new thing, like, just fixing their squat, you know, and that, to me, that makes the biggest impact. Just making sure the kids perform the movements correctly. And then that's not just swap. You know, make sure glute ham raises look right. Make sure reverse hypers look right. You know, make sure benches look right. Make sure they can do a pull down and actually use their back and not just roll over and pull with their biceps and all that stuff. Like, just, that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest problem and the thing that will make the biggest impact, really. Just do your basic stuff right. And then once you have that down, like, I saw a lot of your kids doing really well, trying to smash the bar when they stand up, try to be explosive with stuff, learn to accelerate. That, like, if you do those two things, you'll put yourself way ahead of a lot of people.
Yeah, that's the next hardest thing that we're working through is the acceleration of the bar speed, you know, and understanding that even if it's heavy in your mind, it still has to be aggressive.
Yes. Yep. And it's funny. I'm watching youth sports now and stuff. Those kids don't have that initial pop. You know, even just running or playing defense, like they don't, it's weird. I think it's both a lack of understanding and a lack of strength. You know what I mean? I think there's two factors there. But what, like, you know, and that's where we see a lot of improvement too. Like when teams come over and start learning this stuff, like you go watch them play basketball, they're moving so much easier on the court. Or that, like playing defense, they can change direction so much easier. Those, like everybody talks about dynamic correspondence and carry over to the field. I'm telling you, if you take care of those first two things, all the rest of that, because they practice that stuff every day. But if you kind of help them understand and give them a little strength boost, all the other stuff takes off, you know?
Yeah, it just seems like they want to grind before it's time to grind. You know, they're nowhere clear near their max, but it's amazing how much that bar speed really starts slowing down way before it should.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yep. Starts to get heavy and they get timid when they need to go the other way.
And isn't that crazy? They're not scared to fail. You know what I mean? It's not a fear of failing the lift, but for some reason, yeah, they come into a shell and they quit wanting to exert the force they need to.
Yeah, you're right. That's really weird. Now that I think about it, like you mentioned that, like that's when your instinct should kick in. I gotta fucking go. Like I gotta fucking push now. But it's like, oh no. Here we go. No, turn it on, dude. You're getting pushed on. Push harder.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of what you would think a reflex should be in that instance.
Yeah, it is. But that's like, I remember baseball, there was a point where they were starting to get it. Like I was starting to see guys be able to kind of strain through stuff. And I told them, I was like, guys, your strength is going to take off now. You guys are starting to understand when that bar starts pushing on me harder, I need to push harder back. You know what I mean? And you can see them starting to understand that strain. And that's like, when you start to see that, you can really start to see some things take off.
Now, in saying that, do you find that you have to let them work through it? You know, people want to take that bar from those kids way before they fail. You know, it almost develops this mindset of they don't learn to grind through. They don't learn to think through the lift because the bar's taken before they even have a chance to get their mind in that way of thinking, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. Like if they look terrible, like if they're getting rolled over or their knees are caving in and it looks like shit, like take it. But as long as that bar is moving a little bit and everything form wise, you know what I mean? If they're holding position, let's go, you know, because they don't have the inhibition to tear something off. I never had a kid tear a muscle off lifting weights. Now, if they get out of position, they might tweak their back or whatever. But if they hold good position, they're like, what did Paul used to say? When's the last time you saw a Pinto blow his motor? It doesn't happen. A fucking drag car blows this motor. You know, like you or I've been lifting 20 years. We can push until something goes pop. Those kids aren't going to do it. They'll shut it down. You know what I mean? So they don't. As long as the form is their position, you usually don't need to worry about them tearing some shit. Very rare.
And that's why they can handle so much more volume than somebody that's been in the weight room 20 years. Is their muscle firing pattern is nowhere near what an elite level lifter is going to be.
Yep. 100%. And that's like you said, they can handle the more volume because they're not recruiting as much. It doesn't take as much out of them.
Well, I know you've been on here a while and you got other things to do besides sit on a podcast, but so we'll start kind of finding some good questions to wrap up with, but, bias, it's really common and everyone can debate all these ideas. I listened to you and Dave on a table talk. And you just picked an idea and you're like, you take one side and I'll take the other, you know, and you just went back and forth. You can do that with any idea you want, but, improving your bias and trying to see the whole picture, How much maturity did that take to finally reach that level?
I don't know. I'm not sure I'm there yet. No, it's hard because like you're biased and you think you know what the right thing to do is. And sometimes you'll get so much noise opposite of that. You start thinking, am I crazy? You know what I mean? But that's where you got to kind of, that's in my head. That's where I would always go back to like the people I learned under. Like if something came in that I was questioning or I didn't know if I should kind of swing that way or whatever, I always thought back like, okay, what would Buddy say? What would Paul say? What would growing, you know, Julia, what do the people who know more than me, what would they say about this? You know, that's kind of always what I went back to. And that kind of helped me, I guess, not sway too far, go off the beaten path too much, you know, but it's hard. It's hard because there's, like you said, there's so much information and you do want to do the best for your athletes. So you have to consider stuff. You know what I mean? You can't just brush stuff off as, no, I know everything. It's my way or the highway. It's tough. Like I said, I don't know that I'm there yet.
So we talked about correcting the bias, but let's go into the bias a little, because I've thought about this some in other aspects of my life. There's probably things you saw that you knew that's it. That's working. That's right. And all these voices that didn't see it the way you saw it tried to talk you off a ledge. Were there things that you let people talk you off of that years later you look back and you're like, man, I was onto that 3 years ago and I let people sway my decision, even though I knew that was right?
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe I'm just biased in my head looking back. But I think for the most part, like sticking to kind of the core, it kind of goes back to core values and stuff, you know, like you kind of know. There's something in you that tells you this is bullshit. And I think most of the time that's right. You know what I mean? I'm definitely self-critical enough to recognize when I'm full of shit, I think. You know what I mean? So I like looking back on things and not even just lifting. Like I said, that little, I don't know what it is in your brain, but like, it's kind of like, this isn't right. Like, this doesn't make sense. I'll look into it. You know what I mean? I'll look into it and I'll give it a shot. But looking back a lot of times, you know, maybe I shouldn't have questioned myself as much. Maybe I should have stood more firm on, no, that's fucking bullshit. I know that's bullshit. If you don't want to take my, and I did do some of this, like, if you don't want to take my word for it, take their word for it because they're the expert. You know, I had a running program, just thinking back off the top, I had a running program where we were doing submaximal interval work. And I would take the kids out on the turf and let them take their shoes off because they didn't need to cut too much. We would run the length of the football field and do some intervals. And it was submaximal. It was still hard. You know, it was still hard work. The kids were getting work in. A coach came out and saw it. And was pissed off because they weren't sprinting hard enough. And I tried to explain to them, this is submaximal work. This is going to build their work capacity. They're going to be able to recover. Like, trust me, we've done this before. And within 2 weeks, the kids are in great basketball shape. Now, their cutting and stuff might not quite be there because that's not what we're working on. But the overall workload, they're in shape and they're ready to go. And they're ready to go into that next phase where we're putting in more cutting stuff. And you can take them to basketball practice in the summer and they're not gassed. You know, and I didn't pull this card out, but I was like, I should have said, listen, Charlie Francis, Buddy Morris, and Tommy Mislinski sat down and put this fucking program together. If you don't want to take my word for it, take their word for it. You know what I mean? So I guess I kind of got off track there and ran for a little bit. But yeah, like looking back, you know, I think, and you included, a lot of coaches probably deal with this. Like, we've been doing this long enough, or we've been passionate enough about it where that whatever that is in our head that kind of says, this isn't right, or, you know, this really doesn't make sense. We shouldn't use this. Probably, it's like anything else. Like when you're taking a test, you're not quite sure of the answer, but you kind of go with your gut. A lot of times, like if you have a little bit of knowledge about the subject, go with your gut on that question. You usually get it right, you know?
Yeah, and at least not be in a big hurry to give up your idea for somebody else's, because there's probably merit in there. And you talked about earlier in the podcast, guys like Louis that were so smart kind of were locked up in how they explained something. That doesn't mean they were wrong. They just couldn't explain it in a way that you understood it. So, you know, I think sometimes people don't understand what you're trying to tell them, and then they twist it up, and then they try to talk you off a ledge, and you're like, and it can happen. I think it happens a lot because people are like, well, they don't see it, so there must not be nothing in it. And then come back 5 years later and they're like, man, if I would have stuck with that idea, I'd really have something right now.
Yeah, right. I kind of found that in my own training a little bit. Like there was a period of time where if I drifted too far from kind of the basics of the system, my strength would kind of drop down and I would feel like shit. You know what I mean? So yeah. The answers are there. I think most of the work on this stuff's been done. We just got to find the right doses and amount. You know what I mean?
Well, and you kind of hit the nail on the head. You know, I'll come up with some ideas or some stuff I think I see in the gym. I'll talk to a few guys about it. Sometimes they agree, sometimes they don't agree. But then I'll be reading along in a book, and it'll be in a book. So somebody else somewhere saw it. I'm not seeing anything new. I'm just seeing it for the first time myself. So then I always feel like, man, everybody's going to think I'm just stealing from this guy and coming up with these ideas. But really, we just saw it the same, and that guy beat me to it. One of them I noticed the other day was I was talking to coaches here a while back about the deadlift's ability to build the broad jump, because I feel like it's the same movement pattern. Well, lo and behold, I got to reading Joel Smith's vertical jump book, and he'd stumbled on it, and it's in the book. And I'm like, you know, I talked to all these coaches, and if they read this book, they're going to think I'm just stealing Joel's stuff for my own. But I think if you do this long enough, you're going to come to the same conclusions as other guys. You just may not know it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You think you're onto something new, and then you find out it's been done. Damn it.
Yeah, and then you don't want people to think you're just a copycat. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't know he wrote that until I read it. You can't read all the books before you start. Otherwise, you'll never make it to the gym.
Right, right. Well, like, even writing my book, I've battled with that a lot. I'm like, oh, everybody's just going to think I'm fucking ripping off Louie and Dave. And, you know, because it's not like it hasn't been done before. But then, I said before, I went out and talked to people, and a lot of people didn't kind of get it, the basics. You know, I was like, you know, I'm just, fuck it, we're going to do it, but I'm going to tell it how we did it. You know what I mean? This was my experience and how we did it. So I'm not claiming to have anything new, but this is kind of how we plugged it in and ran it. And just kind of, that made me kind of feel better, you know, if I framed it as, you know, this is my experience and this is how we did it, and this is what we did, you know. Because there's always that thing, like you said, you know, you don't want people to think you're just ripping shit off.
Well, and your environment's different than what Louis's environment was. Louis was dealing with a whole different kind of mindset, a whole different kind of person, and they were looking for different results. So, yeah, yours might go on some theories of Louis, but it's totally different because of the application.
Yeah, and I had another coach reach out. He's like, hey, I'm doing some conjugate stuff with track. I'm thinking about putting a book out. Like, I don't want to like piss you off or whatever. I'm like, no, dude, that's your stuff. Like, you put that in, and I'm sure you tweak stuff. Like, and I probably would learn something, you know, from you too. Like, put it out there. You don't need to, you know, don't worry about pissing anybody off or, you know, thinking you're ripping your stuff off.
And what he sees is going to be a little different than you. So his emphasis of the book is going to be different than what the emphasis you had to what Louis had to what Dave's doing. It's just, we all see things different, and there's value in it, you know? So
yeah,
there can't be enough books out there to try to make people better.
Right. Like, there's a million cookbooks. It's not like, you know,
and more out every year, right?
Yeah. Right. Right.
Well, I'll hit you with this one and we'll see what you think, and then we'll let you have a great evening. But reflecting back over your career, what would you change that you think would give you bigger improvements in the sporting weight room?
Something I've been doing recently that I think probably could have helped. I still like the max effort work. So like when we would get a, when I would get a group who was ready for like true max effort work, and they were into it, you know what I mean? Like buy-in was there and stuff. We typically would do like a traditional West Side thing, like new max effort movement each week, switch it up, work up to one rep max and just keep rotating like that. I kind of have taken Donnie's squat program and kind of bath, like spread it out a little bit. So like what I've been, I think it's working pretty well. The kids seem to be doing pretty good. Like week one, and they're all good with the max effort stuff. So week one, we'll work up to a conservative one rep max on whatever movement we pick. And then week two, we'll come back to that same thing and we'll do like 3 to 5 sets of two around 85%. And I kind of, and we've been doing more close, not like closer medium stance on our heavy day. And, but we'll keep dynamic days out wide. And I kind of took, I heard Jared Bidney speak about stuff he's doing. Like he's doing like brief maximal tension method, he calls it. And I think it's, to my understanding, is basically like a heavier percentage, but you're still moving as fast as you can. So I kind of, he's not doing it exactly how I did, but I took that kind of piece and molded them together. And that seems to be working well. I think with athletes, it gives them a little more volume that they probably need. Because when we did the doubles way back with Donnie's stuff, it really helped the kids. You know what I mean? But we would do, so what we did in the past was 5 doubles, and then if they feel good, we'll go hit a single after that. So I think doing it this way, like kind of establish that almost like a training max and then do that volume work and hopefully, you know, get a little more speed carryover with those doubles, teach them to push something heavy fast like you talked about before. That seems, I like that. That seems to be working pretty well with them. I probably would have done at certain phases in the year some slower eccentrics on my dynamic days. So like maybe some 3 or 5 second lowering pause up fast with 50-60%. That's helped some things from kids and some things we've been doing. More sled work, more max effort jumps, marching. I would put that in some more. Michael Fahey's been doing some really cool stuff with that, potentiation. So those are probably some things. I didn't do hardly any overhead pressing, and I probably would mix a little bit of that in with our kids. I've been doing a little less back work lately, like rowing. In the past, we would do a rowing movement every day of the week we were in the gym, so 4 days a week. And lately, I've been, just because of shoulder injuries I've had and stuff, and like the lats are actually an internal rotator, so I think if we did a little bit of less, not that we had like terrible shoulder injuries or anything, but I think I pulled that back a little bit. So I think we're doing 3 days a week. I think we pulled one of the rowing movements out once a week. Those are some changes I made. If I could, like I'll see Michigan's weight room now, I think, with all the body tempering stations. If I was, somebody gave me a job with all the facility room and budget I could have, that would be in there. I'd have a ton of belt squats. You know, I would have the hip adduction and abduction. I think that's probably the most underrated exercise. You know what I mean? If I could have a bunch of those machines and have the kids warm up on those, that'd be awesome. You can do that stuff with bands, right? But, you know, that would be pretty cool to be able to do that. I didn't do much sprint work when I was coaching. Probably the last year or so I wanted to. I just never, like I would, we jumped every lower body day, and I would probably maybe on one of those days do some 10-yard sprints, like sprint get ups, or just a short sprint variation, a few reps of that. I think that would help. So that was a lot of stuff.
Well, I asked you to look back over a lifetime. So there hopefully is a lot of stuff, right? I mean, that tells you that you learned as you progressed. If it was just like one thing, you know, you'd have to wonder how much you actually did learn.
Yeah, I probably would coach a little different too. Probably be just a little more positive. You know what I mean? Like being out of coaching for a little bit, and now like I get to go down to Waverly, and just like they have they're lifting as a class, so they'll have just general population kids come in. You know, that just, they're not athletes, but they kind of want to learn to lift and stuff. And like a lot of those kids, until they're kind of like, you know, not on sports teams or like just telling some of those kids, good job. You can tell it's like, they don't hear that very often. You know what I mean? So kind of looking back, like thinking a lot of these kids don't care to be in here or whatever. I probably would try to find those small victories somewhere and, you know, be more positive with that stuff. Cause I, like when I was coaching, I did this with my own lifting too. Like I would always, not that I shit on kids, but like for my training, like I would hit a PR and I would be like, okay, cool. But it's not okay. You squatted 1,000, but it's not 1,100. Like fuck 1,000. Let's go. You know what I mean? So probably I was like, when I was coaching, I would show what's next, you know, probably try to help them enjoy what they're doing right now. I think you would help you get more buy-in, you know. But
I talked to a coach the other day and he hit on that, and we just don't think about it, but the positivity of the room and what you think of your athletes means a lot to that athlete. You know, in passing, we're just saying good job or whatever, but to them, you're validating all of the hard work they put in that statement.
Yeah. I actually, you know, it's funny you said, like, this just made me think of that. When I was done coaching, I had a couple kids reach out and they're like, oh, I always remember that one time you said good job or told me I could be a really good sprinter or whatever. And like, I did, like you said, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh shit, you fucking remember that, you know? So it's, yeah, that stuff goes a long way. And like when you're in it and kind of competing, I don't think you really think of it, you know?
Yeah. And you can get lost really easy in what you're doing. At the end of the day, you're working with a mind, but somehow or another, it all gets translated over into weights. And then we kind of forget that piece.
Yeah. That's funny.
Well, coach, I appreciate your time. I'm glad we were able to set this up. You know, you have some great information out there. I'll try to put as much of it in the bio of the podcast as I can. That way people can find it. But yeah, everything you've contributed to strength and conditioning is great stuff. So if people take the time to research it, they're definitely going to learn something.
I appreciate it, man. I'm just paying forward this, the stuff I was lucky enough to learn, you know what I mean? Trying to get it out there. So I don't know. We'll do the best we can, I guess.
Well, thank you very much, coach. And I hope you have a great evening.
Thanks, man. You too.